But it's been a good day. I think it's a good day for the United States, which concerns me most of all.
Mr. President, let me ask you what clinched the arms deal. Did the Soviets come in with a proposal today? Did you accept it as is? Did you make a counteroffer? And exactly what's in the deal? We don't know yet.
Well, we'll find out about that as we go along. Details of how it worked out is we had one sticking point and new types, and it's very, very technical, Terry. And it was resolved today. They came with a proposal, having Jim Baker and Bismertnik having spent hours wrestling the details with our experts. This one had to require our calling back to the technical experts to be sure we weren't overlooking something. And while we were sitting at lunch, we told Mr. Gorbachev that, we finished lunch and I went into a private meeting with him. Jim Baker was waiting to get the call back. He got it back, and in principle we'd agreed, but then the experts signed off on it, so specific parts of the language. And it's so we got the thumbs up and we agreed that we have a deal. And this was true of a lot of other issues. There's give and take all along the way on, you know, technical stuff, encryption of telemetry. I mean, it's a very technical subject. It's plagued us for years. And I'm satisfied, given the response from the defense people, that it is clearly in our interest. They're very pleased about all this.
But you accepted just what they brought in. You didn't...
Today, the language they brought in was fine, yes, and what had happened before was the language that we had proposed and they had proposed was unsatisfactory. Yes, Charles.
Mr. President, the long document that Mr. Gorbachev sent in advance of this meeting was greeted with some skepticism, complaints that it was too vague. Listening to Mr. Major and Mr. Gorbachev at their news conference, it still sounds vague as to what it is Mr. Gorbachev is proposing to do in the Soviet Union. Has he spelled out details and really what all
not in a 432-point program or a paragraph by paragraph, but he's committed himself to the broad principles that are necessary. But the reason we are going to have the follow-on, the way it was defined by Mr. Major, is to be sure we can be helpful to assist fleshing it out. For example, the cooperation with these IFIs, these international financial organizations, is very important stuff. But he's got to, he will come in an associate status to the IMF, to the World Bank. He'll see how all these things work. And out of all that, and I think in a relatively short period of time, practical suggestions will occur to their experts as to how we can go ahead and implement the broad market reforms he talks about, price reforms he's talking about, how we can sooner achieve convertibility of the ruble rather than later. So I think I accept your premise that it's not all fleshed out in every detail, and I think President Gorbachev recognizes that. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been quite as enthusiastic over what transpired today as he was.
President, you said that this was a very frank discussion.
Here, and I'll be right over to you.
Okay. Is there anything the United States can do unilaterally for the Soviet Union at this point, or is there zero that you can you could tell him either at lunch or during the afternoon?
Well, I think I don't know whether what we did today on arms control was unilateral in
but
terms of the
you
U.S.
But the economic and the arms control on economics. Is
well,
there any
yeah.
single thing the United States can do?
Well, look, we've got a tremendous know-how in the field of energy. And so do other countries. But if there's one sector of their economy, in addition to agriculture, distribution reform, that's crying out for outside help, technological help, it's the energy side. And I think we can help them enormously there. But to do all that, you know, there has to be a finalization of the details between these republics and the center. And that's what's very difficult. But I think President Gorbachev understands that. I think he's determined to finalize this union treaty. And as I may have mentioned to you the other day, mentioned to you when we had some experts up the other day, our experts outside the government experts, they were unanimous in the view that this is the single most important thing they can do for us then to facilitate energy and agriculture distribution and all of that. Plus, I think when our finance minister goes there, or Nick Brady, when that is all resolved, I think there are things we can do bilaterally. But at this juncture, there isn't one single program or something of that nature that comes to mind. Susan?
Does he understand the relationship between things like aid to Cuba and their high levels of defense spending and the barrier that that may put in the future to aid from the West?
I think he understands the political problems, Susan, that go with that, especially for the United States. And that was discussed by me, and then it came up in the G7, and he points out that there are much, much less aid going into Cuba. But I think what you're asking about is the political problem that we've got about helping the Soviet Union, as long as they're propping up the one totalitarian dictator, communist dictator in our hemisphere. So I think he understands it. In terms of total economic drawdown on the Soviet Union, it's very small, even though they've got some enormous economic problems. But yes, that was discussed and other issues as well of that nature.
Is it clear to him that the political side is going to be the determining factor, or could be, in terms of reaching a point where actual cash is provided to the Soviet Union?
Well, I think he understands, because we've been talking about that one, particularly on Cuba. We've been talking about that for a long time. But let me give you another example coming at it in a different way. Iraq used to have a very special relationship with the Soviet Union, and yet the Soviet Union, I think, was very helpful in the United Nations in standing up against Iraq. It showed a shift. So I think they've demonstrated an ability to shift, and I think that. But I think your point is, well, I think your point is well taken, because it's very hard to ask the American people, please spend money, send checks, when this one dictatorship 80 miles from our shores is being propped up. So I think there's much more understanding on that. Not that I worked any magic on it, but yes, we talked about it here. But also because it was brought up without any prompting by others as an example of the kinds of regional problems that we'd like to see resolved. But just as we go forward on a bilateral arms control agreement, because it is in the national interest of the United States, we can do other things, even though all these regional problems aren't totally resolved. It makes it much more difficult, however, to have the Cuban problem, Hank Craig, and then Helen.
If you were still in the oil business, would you feel safe in risking any capital in a joint venture with the Soviet Union and taking this beyond technical assistance, given the example of, say, Chevron in Kazakhstan and some other instances?
I think I'd want to know who I was making a deal with. I think I'd want to know that I could get my money back, get out. I think I'd want to know that they had worked out their problems on taxation. But, you know, I use an example that from my own limited experience a long time ago. And I told him that we've got a federation of states. We've had 200 years to sort it out. And even so, we have, in the offshore drilling business, I remember arguing with the federal branch, the Coast Guard, while still having to get permits from the state of Louisiana, state of Texas, and then worrying about how the states interacted with the federal government on offshore drilling rights, who gets what. And so there's a parallel there, but we've sorted it out in the United States. We have orderly arrangements. We don't need a union treaty, but people know where the taxes are going to be levied and who's in charge of making the deal and the contract. And those things have to be resolved. Once resolved, I think that the future is wide open, because they are rich in natural resources, and they want the reform to keep going. And they're trying to move to market. So It I think it just depends on how this union treaty works out for large scale investments. But there's an enormous potential there. And I keep saying to myself, think how things were 5 years ago. Think what it was like. Who would have dreamed we'd be talking about the kinds of things we are with the Soviet Union? Who would have dreamed the Russian Republic would have had a literally fair and popular election, or that the Eastern Europeans would be free, or that the Berlin Wall would be down? I mean, a lot has happened. And it's going to take a while before a lot more happens. But I think what's important for American people, and certainly for this president, to keep in mind the big picture as we worry about the difficulties that they face now in moving to a market economy. Helen.
Mr. President, when did you actually know that a new deal had been clinched? I'm following up on Terry. And had you had a feeling beforehand, and is this the end of the road? And what did you agree upon? I mean, I know it's technical, but can you give us one word? Because we're writing stories and we don't know.
Well, let me get Brent to help you with the details on it. But when we actually agreed, that means I'm not familiar with absolutely every T being crossed and every I being dotted.
And,
well, after Smirnik sat down with Jim Baker, which was just a few minutes before Mr. Gorbachev walked in here. In other words, this wasn't a stacked deck. This wasn't set. We didn't have an indication that they were going to come with a proposal, our having made some, that was acceptable to them. But so it really, literally, Helen, it happened when their party arrived here. Jim went off in another room there, and then he came in and told me that he thought this looked very good. He'd run it by General Scowcroft, and who took a look at it. He's an expert in these matters, and he felt that it was acceptable. But again, it is so highly technical that we had to go on ranges of missiles and all of this, that we had to go, felt more comfortable going back, talking to the technical arms control experts. But it wasn't a set deal. I mean, we haven't known that this was going to happen. I was perfectly prepared to say to him today, look, let's keep working on it. But he was very pleased. I think he felt that what they came with was a deal maker. And sure enough, it was.
So you had no previous inkling,
no.
And nothing last night. They all came
nothing.
In smiling, though, and they seemed to...
The Soviets, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think they felt that they had met the criteria that had been spelled out by Jim Baker and our defense experts in Washington. I think that accounts for that. Yeah, Mayor.
You noted, Mr. President, that you've been 9 years at this. Are you prepared now to take a breather and say that's enough on arms control? Or do you want to roll up your sleeves and see if you can follow up with more deep cuts?
Well, I think we always ought to be willing to reduce arms if it is in between the two countries, if it is in the national interest of the United States. But let us get this one put to bed with the T's crossed and the I's dotted, and then we'll think that it's what the next step should be. But I haven't started thinking that way. We want to get this one anchored down.
Have you any concern about the Senate on this?
I don't know. I don't. I say I don't know. I mean, I don't. No. I mean, it's a good deal, and the defense people are so enthusiastic that it's in the interest of the United States that I think it ought to sail through the Senate. Now, we have every obligation to answer their technical questions. They've got some great arms control experts up there on both sides of the aisle, but I think they will be well satisfied with this. Yeah, Charles and then Jim. Oh, excuse me, Jim and then Charles.
It wasn't too many years ago. It wasn't too many years ago, Mr. President, that the U.S. considered the Soviet Union the evil empire, understanding that the relationship is improving. How do you consider the Soviets today? Ally, still an adversary?
Well, I think as long as we have missiles deployed, we've got to be realistic. Missiles deployed against each other. Allies aren't in that posture. We're moving. First place, we got friendly relations. There is the evil empire syndrome ended when I think the Cold War ended, and I think it has ended. And we've got very different times now. But I don't want to suggest that everything is perfect. We've got the problems that Susan asked about. We've got certain arms problems. And but we've gone so far that I would say very friendly relations at this point, and a determination on our part to try to help in every practical way to further reform. Because reform is not just an internal reform, it's democracy that they're moving towards and have really manifested a real interest in. It's markets, it's capitalism, it's all the things that have helped other people around the world, and it can help them. And as that develops, I'm just convinced that any things that have been in our way of friendship before, such as arms and our worries about each other, will diminish. Trade is great. It's a good, salutary way to make things better. So I would characterize the relations as good. Still some problems. Nobody that I know of, and certainly in our administration, is interested in seeing them fly apart or having their wheels fall off on the economy or anything of that nature. That's quite different than it was a few years ago.
But you made the point very strongly that there was no linkage between START and what went on here with the G7 in terms of providing technical assistance to the Soviets. But how far can you go with the Soviet Union when, in fact, missiles are pointed at each other?
Well, that's a good question. But I think trade can help an awful lot to make the climate such that the suspicion that they might still harbor in some corners of the Soviet Union about our intentions is laid to rest. It's I think there are some elements there that are still highly suspicious of U.S. intentions towards them. And perhaps there are some highly suspicious in the United States of Soviet intentions toward us. But I think we can move as forward just as fast as practicality dictates on the economy, and I think that will be and I think with that will come a enhanced democracy in the Soviet Union, because I think people, once they see how privatization works, once they see how markets works, once they see how elections work, it's bound to steamroller. So I think the long range problem will take care of itself. Shorter range, we want to move forward irrespective of what's happening now in the arms field, in terms of helping them do what we want to see them do, move down the democracy road. Yeah.
Mr. President, you mentioned Iraq earlier. Will President Gorbachev support you if it's necessary to renew military action?
That was not discussed today. I think that they, like us, would hope that we wouldn't have to use force. But perhaps that matter will come up when we're in Moscow. But I will just revert back to how they stood up against aggression with us in the United Nations. And I know that they're very concerned about nuclear proliferation, proliferation of nuclear capabilities. And but I didn't get into any question of if we had to use force, would they join us? But clearly, I've said before, and I'll say it here again, we don't want to go, we're not any lone ranger out there. We think we have authorities under the United Nations resolutions to do what's needed to be done. But I am hopeful that it can be done without force. But if they continue to lie, if they continue to harbor equipment that could lead to development of nuclear weapons in direct contravention of their obligations, then we have to review our options. But it wasn't discussed in that manner today.
Do you feel you have the support of the other G7 countries?
I thought it was fairly well spoken on that. I'm teeing off from what François Mitterrand said the day that we arrived in Paris. And I think most, I don't want to put words in everybody's mouth, but I think most would agree with what Mitterrand said. Yeah, Jim.
Oh, you've done. That's President George Bush at the United States Embassy here in London today, talking about a wide range of issues at the conclusion of this economic summit. Although there will be a working dinner tonight, he described this as a historic day because for the first time there will be a reduction in the long-range nuclear weapons in the arsenals of both Moscow and in Washington, D.C. That is a moment to savor, and we'll have continuing coverage of this economic summit, complete details tonight, as well on how these industrial power leaders reacted to the Gorbachev economic plan. For now, I'm Tom Brokaw, NBC News in London. I'll see you tonight on NBC News.